Shalom Aleichem to everybody, a gutavach, as we concluded a Sefer Shmos this past Shabbos with Parshios Vayakel and Pekudei, brings us to the end of the segment where the Torah describes the Mishkan, the Asiyas HaMishkan, and the donations to the Mishkan, and ultimately the building of the Mishkan Rosh Chodesh Nisan. And as we've noted in previous Shiurim, in previous years, the Torah dedicates five Parshios to Binyan HaMishkan, Parshas Truma, Tetzaveh, Kisisa, Vayakel, and Pekudei. And of course, in terms and in light, and in comparison to other Parshas in the Torah, certainly the Parshas in the Mishkan take up an enormous amount of Psukim, an enormous amount of Parshos. Close to half of Sefer Shmos deals with the commandments, the building, and the ultimate assembly of the Mishkan. And of course, there's a lot to talk about, to understand, before Shachumash address that, deal with that question, and address why specifically the Torah goes to such great lengths to deal with the minutiae and the details of Binyan HaMishkan. And what I'd like to do today is to try to understand another element of the Mishkan, and another reason may be what emerges as to the repetition of the Psukim and the Parshas of Torah, and the stress that the Torah places on the Parshas of the Mishkan. If we turn back to the beginning of Asiyas HaMishkan, Parshas Truma, Perek Chafei. In the opening nine psukim, the Torah, there are details that the Mishkan is going to be built. The Kadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu to tell Bnei Yisrael, V'yikhu li truma, take for me a truma, and be benevolent, be philanthropic, donate to the Mishkan incredibly, and give me zahav, v'chesef, v'nechoshes, gold, silver, and copper. The Torah begins in Pasuk Gimel, deciding and articulating these three special, very expensive gifts. We need gold, we need silver, we need copper. Zav, v'chesef, and nechoshes. And following that, and seemingly in chronological order, the Torah continues about other donations that are necessary. Uscheles, ve'argamon, v'solas, shani, v'sheish, v'izim. Turquoise, purple, scarlet, wool, linen, goat hair. And then the Torah continues in Pasuk Hei, V'oros eilim me'adamim, V'oros techashim ve'atzei shitim. We need red dyed ram skin. We need certain types of tachash skins, acacia wood, atzei shitim. And then the Torah continues and goes on in Pasuk Vav, Shemen lamor besamen l'meshemen ha'mishka v'liktores ha'asamim. We need aromic incense. We need there to be oil for illuminating the menorah. We need there to be spices. Thus, in chronological order, we begin with Zav and Nechesef and Nechoshes, the most expensive, the most important items, and then we go down lower and lower in chronological order in terms of the donations that are supposed to be brought. But surprisingly, the last thing that we are told to bring seems to be the most expensive. Avnei Shoham v'Avnei Miluim lo'eifer v'lachoshen, the Shoham stone and the Avnei Miluim, the special stones for the setting that's going to be placed on the eifer and on the breastplate of the Kohen. And the Rechaim HaKadosh asks the question, why is it that the most expensive items, the Avnei Shoham, the Avnei Miluim lo'eifer v'lachoshen, are listed last, in light of the fact that it seems that through Psukim Gimel, Dal, Hey, and Vav, we've listed them in all in chronological order, starting with Zav, Chesef, and Nechoshes, going down to Scheles, Argamon, Solas, Shani, going down to Oros, Izim, Adamim, then finally Shemen, Lamar, Besam, Lamar, Shemen, Mishka, gold, silver, and copper. And then you go to different types of skins, and turquoise, and purple, and scarlet. Go down to skins, and tachash skins, and acacia wood. Go down to oil, and to different types of aromatic incense that are necessary. So if you're going down in chronological order, why save the last thing, the Avnei Shom, Avnei Miluim, La'ifra, La'choshen? That should be the first prior to Zahav, Chesef, and Nechoshes. This is a question raised by the Orach Chaim HaKadosh on these psukim in the beginning of Parshas Truma. Before explaining and saying a pshat, the Orach Chaim HaKadosh's pshat, and the reason that Avnei Shom and Avnei Miluim are listed last, let's ask yet another question. If you take a look in Parshas Vayakel, Perek Lamed Hei, Pasuk Chav Zayin, the Torah tells us, V'hanesim heviu es avnei hashom es avnei hamiluim. Do you know who donated? Do you know who gave the avnei shom to the avnei miluim, to the ephod and the choshen? Who was it? The Torah tells us that it was the Nesim. And indeed, that's a very important point that we don't yet know in Parshas Truma. It's only in Parshas Vayakel where the Torah reveals who it was that donated these most expensive and precious items. V'hanesiim heviu es avnei hashom es avnei hamiluim la'efor v'lachoshen. It's in here that lies the answer as to why the avnei miluim and the avnei are listed last. Because Rashi quotes that there's a word. The word Nisim is misspelt in the Torah. The word Nisim should be spelled Nun, Sin, Aleph, Yud, Mem. However, as it's written in the Torah, Parshas Vayakel, Perik, Lamed, Hei, Pasuk, Chav, Zayin, it's missing the Yud. And Rashi notes that. And Rashi explains, Lefishinis, Atzlu, Mitchila, Nechsara, Os, Mishmam. V'hanesim, k'ziv. Rashi, quoting the Medrash Rabbah, in this pasuk in Parshas Vayakel, Perek, Lamed Hey, pasuk Chaf Zayin. The word Nesim is misspelt; it's missing the Yud, as a punishment for the chiefs of the tribes of Bnei Yisrael because they didn't donate with alacrity, with enthusiasm, but rather they waited. They were misatzlu; they were lazy. And thus the Torah punishes them by listing them and not spelling their name accurately, missing the Yud. And in light of that, we can now understand why it is that the donation of the Avnei Miluim and the Avnei Choshen were listed last in the beginning of Parshas Terumah, because it was Nesim who brought them. And indeed, it was the most expensive, important donation that was given. But it wasn't given with excitement and enthusiasm. It wasn't given with a heart. It wasn't given with a push and extra strength and extra excitement. And thus the Torah punishes the Nesim by not only spelling their name without the Yud. The Yud is the most special letter. The Yud connects every letter in the Hebrew alphabet. But the Torah also punishes them by listing their donation, albeit that it's the most expensive one, and listing it last, after Zav v'chesef v'nechoshes, after Scheles v'agmar v'solah shani, after Oros Izim me'adamim, or after the Oros Techashim, after the Atzishitim, after the Shemin la'ma'or, b'samin la'shemin ha'mishkav l'ktaros, some of the most inexpensive items. All of a sudden, Avnei Shom v'Avnei Miluim la'efer l'choshen are listed last, albeit that the most expensive, to punish and to teach the Nisim a lesson. Not only are you missing a letter from your name, but you're also going to be listed last in terms of your donation. And what emerges from the pshat of the Orach Chaim HaKadosh, take a look inside the beginning of Parshas Terumah, and what emerges from the pshat in Rashi in Parshas Vayakel, in the missing yud from the letter Nisim, is that if you want to be successful, if you want to come close to Hashem, if you really want to build a place, an abode, a house for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it has to be built with excitement, with an enthusiasm. You can't be misatzel, you can't be lazy. You got to push yourself, and you got to be able to go above and beyond. And ultimately, that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is looking for. V'asoli mikdash v'shachanti b'socha means, don't just do what you have to do. Don't just live by rote. Don't just get by and fulfill and dot the I and cross the T. But rather want it, desire it, push yourself to do it. You take a look in the Sefer Sichos Musar, B'chaim Shmulevitz's Sefer, ultimately published based upon his famous shmuzin that he gave in the Mir Yeshiva, in the year Tuf Shin Lamed Beis, printed in the Sichos Musar. Here, Reb Chaim Shmulevitz raises the question, what did the Nesim do so wrong? Because if you take a look in Rashi, in Parshas Vayakel, on that very pasuk, v'hanesim hevi, where the missing yud is missing, the Nesim had an explanation. And Rashi quotes Rabbi Nosson, Maro Nesim lehisnadi b'chanukas b'zbeach t'chila, u'b'melechas ha'mishkan lo hisnadu t'chila. Why was it the Nesim waited so long? Why didn't they give immediately with alacrity, enthusiasm, his excitement? Why didn't they push themselves? Why weren't they like the rest of Klal Yisrael, who immediately were benevolent and philanthropic and gave gold, silver, and copper? What did they wait for? Rashi, quoting the Medrash Reb Nosson, says they had a pshat. Kach amru nesiim, yisnadvu tzibur mash nisnadvim. The nesiim, the chiefs of each tribe, said, allow each and every single Jew to donate what he or she wishes. Allow them to give. Umash mechasrim, whatever is unable to be allocated, whatever is unable to be raised, whatever funds are missing, we'll take care of the gap. We'll take care of the vacuum. We'll take care of the missing link to make sure that everything is there. Since Klal Yisrael came with such excitement and enthusiasm, they donated so much, and they gave and were benevolent and philanthropic. Once they gave, as the pasuk says, "Vamlacha ha'isa dayam amar nesiim ma'aleinu lasos," there was nothing left for them to give, and the only thing left was the Avnei Shom, the Avnei Miluim, and that's what they gave. Ask the Chaim Shmulevitz, what's wrong? The nesiim had a very good cheshbon; they were very honest. It seems to be a very logical deduction and a very make sense as a philanthropist. Allow everybody else do what they're supposed to do. Let them give their dollar, their $5, their $10, their $20, the $100 bills, and we'll fill in with a big check at the end. What's so wrong? What did the Nesim do wrong? Do they really deserve to have a yud missing from their name in the pasuk? Do they really deserve that their donation should be listed last, even though they gave the most expensive donation? What's so bad? Asks Reb Chaim from Levitz. What kind of punishment is this? Why are they deserving of this? And Reb Chaim from Levitz explains exactly what we set out with. Sometimes you can't make such a calculation. If you really want to give, if you really want to donate, if you really care, you're going to push yourself and take care of it right away. You're not going to wait to make a methodological calculation and algorithm in order that everything should be perfect. But if you really love somebody, you're not just an ohev chesed, you're a rodev chesed. You're not just going to wait to be asked, but you're going to give before you're asked. And thus the Nesiim were missing that excitement, that enthusiasm, that willingness to give and to donate before there was any calculation, before anybody told them what was missing. They should have been the first to give the Avnei Sham Avnei Milim. They should have been the first to write the check. They first should have given the first check. The first donation should have been from the Nesiim. Although they did have a logical explanation. Nonetheless, that's not what a Kadosh Baruch Hu wills. That's not what a Kadosh Baruch Hu desires. And that explains Reb Chaim Shem Levitz is the pshat in the Or HaChaim HaKadosh. That explains Reb Chaim Shem Levitz is the pshat in Rashi, both in Parshas Truma and Parshas Vayakel. What a Kadosh Baruch Hu is looking for, Meleches HaMishkan, and really all of Avodas Hashem, is to push yourself and to do without being asked and to go above board, above and beyond, and to push until one is so successful, because there's no end to what one could accomplish if you really believe that you can get the job done. And that's what Klal Yisrael did successfully, and that's where the Nesiim fell short. If you take a look and continue in Parshas Vayakel, Perek Lamed Zayin, Pasuk Zayin, the Torah tells us something else in a very ambiguous Pasuk. Perek Lamed Vav, Pasuk Zayin, the Torah tells us that a Klal Yisrael gave with such great excitement, with such great fervor, such philanthropy, such devotion, such dedication, that Moshe Rabbeinu had to vayaviru kol b'machana. He let out a proclamation, ish v'ish al yasu od melach l'srumas ha-kodesh. Please, enough donations. You've given so much. Could you imagine any organization, a shul, yeshiva, basically, stop giving, stop donating, it's enough. We don't need your money anymore. Stop the checks. Stop the credit cards. No more crowdfunding. We have enough money. That's what had to happen. Klal Yisrael gave so much. This is what the Nesiim reacted to. They were shocked. The people stopped. There was no more gold, silver, copper. There's no more oros elim techashim me'adamim. There was nothing else necessary. Not shemen lamor, not besam l'shem mishkos. Finished. And then the Torah tells us in Pasuk Zayin, v'hamalacha ha'isa dayam. There was plenty. Plenty, enough, sufficient amount of work and donations that were given. For everything that was necessary. And then there's one added word. Vehoser. And there was excess. Ask the Rishonim, the Ramban, and the Sforno. The Or HaChaim HaKadosh asks the question as well. It's a stira mineu bei. It's a conflict in the pasuk. V'hamalacha ha'isa dayam vehoser. There was enough and there was extra. That's an antonym. Those two words don't work together. Was there enough or was there excess? V'hamalacha ha'isa dayam, there was enough. V'hoser, and there was extra. Ask the Ramban, the Sforno, the Rechaim, the Kalash, and other Mefarshei HaChumash. How do you explain that? Those two words don't work together in the very same pasuk. Is there enough or is there excess? Chaim HaKadosh explains it was a miracle that although there was excess, there was exactly enough that everybody that gave their donation was used. Sometimes there's extra funds and somebody's going to feel bad that my donation, my gift wasn't used. No. There was plenty of extra. There was so much, but still every donation was used. But there's another pshat that I want to share with you. The pshat is as follows. Each and every single individual knows and understands full well what their limitations are. We know what we can do. We know what we're successful at and we know what we can do. It's true in Ruchnias and Gashmias. It's true in how much Torah I could learn, how well I could daven with how much Kavanah, how much Chesed I could perform, how good my Kibbud Ava'im is going to be. I know how many hours a day I can work, how many hours a week I can work. And that's it. That's my limit. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you made a mistake. That's the world of Dayan. You have limitations, but it's not true. Vehoser, in your back pocket, in your knapsack, and you have the ability to go above and beyond. You could be Hoser, you could push yourself even farther.
And thus the pshat in the pasuk is v'hamalacha ha'isa dayam klal yisrael knew their limitations. They knew what they could bring. They knew how much gold, silver, and copper. They knew exactly how much they could afford, how much they could donate, how much they can give. But they went one step further. They didn't stop in the world of Dayom, but they pushed themselves to the world of Hoser, to the world of extra. Push yourself one extra iota, one extra inch, one extra mile, one extra minute of Talmud Torah, one extra second of Kavanah, one extra chesed, so small. That's the world of Hoser. And Klal Yisrael, Bnei Yisrael, the Yotzei Midbar, the Yotzei Mitzrayim, they were able to live in this world of Hoser. And thus, that's the pshat in the pasuk. V'amlocha ha'isa dayam. They pushed themselves until their limit. But they didn't stop there. V'hoser, they went above and beyond. This pshat is a tribute to Rabbi Gedalia Finkel. He said this about his late brother, Rabbi Nassim Tzvi Finkel, in his hespin, in his eulogy on the late Mir Rosh Hashiva Nassim Tzvi Finkel, who lived his life like that, a man of Parkinson's, a man who had a debilitating disease, who could hardly walk and talk and do anything. But he built the Torah empire, the Torah citadel of the Mir Yeshiva in Yerushalayim with sweat and tears and effort and energy. And he said on his brother that he lived in the world of Hoser, the world above and beyond Dayam. And this is who he was, and this is who Klal Yisrael were, and this is the life and the lessons that we learn from the Mishkan in these five parshios. Not like the Nesiim, who had a cheshbon, we can't and we'll wait and, you know, let's see what happens and we'll go from there. No, no, no. If you live like that, you'll be punished, you'll be missing a yud from your name, and your donation, albeit the most expensive, is going to be listed last. But if you live the world of Hoser, you can accomplish much, much more. And that's who Klal Yisrael showed themselves to be in these parshios and the parshios of the Mishkan. Indeed, the Ramban Nachmanides makes this very point. And he asks the question, how could it be that a nation of slaves, avodim leparo, who had no technical experience, who had no engineering ability, they had no way to know how to build a Mishkan, they never worked with gold and silver and copper and tannery and hairs and all of the different diamonds and gems and the different amazing, incredible donations that we read about, where would they know how to build a Mishkan? They were avodim, they were slaves, they know how to build one thing with mortar and pistol, with water, they knew how to build the Pisum in Ramses. That's all they could do, but they were never taught. They didn't have experience. They weren't engineers. They weren't contractors. They weren't builders. They didn't have the technical skills. They didn't have the cognitive understanding. They can't build a Mishkan. Asks the Ramban, how did they do it? How's it feasible? How's it possible? And like this pshat of the Hoser, says the Ramban, Vayigba libo bedarkei Hashem. They lifted themselves above and beyond. They lifted their spirits to the highest level possible. Because the Ramban says, if you want to accomplish, you want to do, you can do it. You just have to be magbia. You have to lift yourself up bedarkei Hashem. If you push yourself, if you try, you can do it. And thus a nation of slaves was able to build the most magnificent edifice, the most magnificent, beautiful building where the Shechina will be sure, the Mishkan Hashem, that was beautiful, that was filled with a Mizbeach, that was filled with a Shulchan, that had the Aron and the Luchos, and the gorgeous tans, and the skins, and all of the beautiful linen that was used. That's a nation was able to build it without any ability. That's Vayig Baliba Bedarkei Hashem, that's living in the world of Hoser. I'm not going to be satisfied with Dayom, with just living with my limitations, but I could do more, and I could accomplish, I could go beyond my reach, and I could reach beyond what's possible and feasible. And that's what the Parshios of the Mishkan teach us. And if you take a look throughout the Parshios of Mishkan, specifically in Parshios Vayakel and Pekudei, there's a word that's repeated over and over and over again, and I believe the reason for it is because it teaches us this very lesson. That's Vayas. Vayas means you made. Vayas, Vayas, Vayas es HaShulchan, Vayas es HaMenorah, Vayas es Mizbeach HaKetoras, Vayas es Mizbeach HaOlah, Vayas es HaKiyor, Vayas es HaChatzar. You keep on going and going. Vayakel, Pekudei, Vayas, 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 Vayas es HaEifor, Vayas es Avnei HaShoah, Vayas es HaChoshen. Why? The repetition of that word over and over again. Because sometimes you just got to do.
And that's what Bnei Yisrael did when the building of the Mishkan. They just did. Without any equation, without any methodology, without any algorithms. Let's do it and let's get the job done. Put the pedal to the metal. Let's think about a plan and act upon it. Let's not just not be cognitive. Let's not just have a meeting, but let's do something. Let's make it happen. Vayas, vayas, vayas. They'll do it. And they did it. And they accomplished. And if you take a look in Perek Lamed Zayin Pasuk Aleph, the Torah describes who was it that built the Aron Vayas Bitzalel as Aron Atzei Shitim Amasayim. And Rashi asks the question, Bitzalel? Was it really Bitzalel who built the Aron? If you take a look back in Parshas Truma, the Torah tells us that everybody is commanded to build the Aron. Vayasu! Everybody was engaged in the building of Aron, because when it comes to the Aron represents Torah. And when it comes to Torah, everybody has a place in the Aron. Everybody has a place in the Ark. Everybody has a place in the Aron Kodesh. V'osu Aron Atzei Shitim, the Torah tells us back in Parshas Truma, Perek Kafei Pasuk Yud. So if it's V'osu Aron, if everybody together is supposed to build the Aron, why does the Torah describe in Parshas V'yakel as V'yas Bitzalel? It wasn't just Bitzalel. And listen to the words of Rashi, quoting the Medrash Tanchuma. Because Bitzalel pushed himself. Bitzalel willed, he desired, he wanted, he was enthusiastic, he didn't sit back, but he pushed and he pushed and he pushed and he pushed. He pushed himself to the nth degree, more than anybody else. Nikres al shmo. Therefore, it's considered to be his aron. Vayas Bitzalel es aron. He was the one who gets credit because he was the one who pushed himself. And indeed, in Sefer Bamidbar Parshas Nasa, on that very day that the Mishkan was completed, Rosh Chodesh Nisan, as the Torah continues the story in Sefer Bamidbar, on the day that all of the Nesiim started to be bringing their offerings, their karbanos. And the Torah tells us, Parshas Naso, Perek Zayin, Pasuk Aleph, Ahi Bayom Kalos Moshe Lakim Es HaMishkan. The day that Moshe completed the building of the Mishkan. And Rashi again asks the question, Kalos Moshe? Moshe finished building the Mishkan? What happened to Bitzalel, Aholiyav, V'chol Chacham Lev, Asu Es HaMishkan? What happened to all of those people? Vayas Bitzalel Es Aron. What happened to all the artisans, the Chachamim, the Nedivei Lev? Why does the Torah in Parshas Naso, Perek Zayin, Pasuk Aleph, tell us that it was Moshe Rabbeinu Bayom Kalos Moshe Lakas Mishkan? Why does Moshe get the credit for completing the Mishkan? A question that Rashi asks. And says Rashi, listen to these words, Talo hakasov b'moshe l'fisha moser nafsho olav, like Bitzalel. Since Moshe was moser nefesh, Moshe pushed himself so far, liros tavnis kol davar v'davar k'moshe rebahar. He looked to make that the engineering should be perfect and the architecture should match every single inch, was identical to the way that was described him in Har Sinai. Kamo shahareu bahar lahoros lose amalacha vlota betavnis achas. Moshe made not one error. And because Moshe was so meticulous, so careful, so prudent and so calculated and conscientious, that every single kli and that every single aspect of the Mishkan, every inch and every foot and every yard would be exactly as described, the Torah gives Moshe the credit for Hakamas HaMishkan Vahi Bayom Kalos Moshe Lahakim Es HaMishkan. Moshe is given credit. And then Rashi goes on and tells us that it's not only true about Moshe, and not only true about Bitzalel, who we saw earlier. V'chein Matzina B'David, we find the same thing about David Melech Yisrael. So who built the Mishkan? Of course it was Shlomo HaMelech. But we refer to it as the Mikdash of David. Nizmor Shir Chanukas Habayis LeDavid, we say every single morning before Baruch Shamar, who is the author? Who is the builder of the Mikdash? It's David. Why David, asks Rashi? What about his son Shlomo, who really built it? Lefisha Maser Nafsho Binyan Beis HaMikdash, since he was Moser Nefesh, he pushed himself, since he willed it, desired it, wanted it, was enthusiastic. Therefore, he's given the ultimate credit for the building of the Beis HaMikdash. So it's true about Bezalel. It's true about Moshe. It's true about David HaMelech. And if you take a look back in Parshas Pekudei, the Torah tells us something very similar about Moshe Rabbeinu's involvement in the Hakamas HaMishkan. The Torah tells us, Perek Lametes, Pasuk Lamed Gimel, regarding the completion of the building of the Mishkan. Vateichel Kol Avodas Mishkan Olmoed, the Mishkan came to its conclusion. Everything was brought in front of Moshe Rabbeinu. The work was completed. Moshe Rabbeinu was satisfied. And then the Torah tells us finally, on that very special day just referred to, Rosh Chodesh Nisan, everything came to its conclusion. Vayhi b'chodesh harishon, perek mem, pasuk yud zayin. B'shana hashenis, in the second year, letzeis b'nei Yisrael b'mitzrayim, be'echad l'chodesh, Rosh Chodesh Nisan, the first month, the first day of the year, hukam ha-mishkan, the Mishkan was erected. And the word hukam ha-mishkan means that the Mishkan was placed. The Mishkan was completed. And it sounds as if it just happened automatically. The Mishkan was erected. It just stood. But on the other hand, if you continue in Pasuk Yud Ches, the Torah tells us, Vayakem Moshe as a Mishkan. As we saw earlier, Moshe erected the Mishkan. So who did it? Was it Hukam HaMishkan? Was it just happened by itself? Did it just get up? Did it just establish itself that the tabernacle was erected? Hukam HaMishkan? Or is it Vayake Moshe? Or did Moshe do it? Now Rashi told us earlier Vayake Moshe because Moshe was Moser Nefesh. But here in this pasuk it seems that it happened automatically. How do we understand that the Mefarshei HaChumash raised this question? Who really built the Mishkan? Did it happen by itself? Hukam? Or was it Moshe Rabbeinu himself who built the Mishkan? And there's a Rashi that answers this question as well. And Rashi tells us about a dialogue that took place between Moshe Rabbeinu and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Moshe Rabbeinu says to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as Rashi tells us, Perek Lamites, Perek Lamites, Pasuk Lam Gimel. Moshe Rabbeinu turns to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and says to him, Moshe Lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Eich Efshah HaKamasle De'adam, how could I lift up this sanctuary? How could you tell me to bring this Mishkan and to erect it? It's not feasible, it's not possible, asks Moshe Rabbeinu to God. What do you want me to do? The crush and the beams are so heavy. Says Rashi. He couldn't do it. Then Moshe Rabbeinu asks HaKadosh Baruch Hu, how could I do it? And listen to what Rashi says, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe Rabbeinu, Amar lei, Asuk ata biyadcha, v'nire kimakimo, v'hu niskaf v'kam me'elav. Moshe Rabbeinu, you just try. You do your job. You do your best and I will do the rest. You just put your hands on the crushim. Place your hands on those beams. If you do your part, I'll do the rest. And thus says Rashi, that's the pshat in the pasuk v'zeu shenemar, hukam ha-mishkan, hukam ha-elav. It happened by itself. Because once there was a vayakem Moshe, then there's hukam ha-mishkan. You do your best. You try the hardest you can. You push yourself as much as you can, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu to Moshe Rabbeinu. I'll take care of the height. I'll take care of the weight. I'll take care of the difficulty, the challenge. You do what you have to do. I will do the rest. You do your best. I will do the rest. And thus, that's the pshat, why the Torah tells us, Vayakim Moshe and Hukam HaMishkan. And that's our job in life. We have to do what we have to do. We have to push ourselves. We have to live the world of the Hoser. We have to live the world of Ayigba Libo Midarke Hashem. We have to go above and beyond and push and push and try harder. Not to be satisfied with the world of Dayam. Not like the Nesiim did with their equation and calculation. Thus, lost the Yud from Nesiim, and thus their donation of the Avnei Shom and Avnei Milum are listed last. We have to live the world of Mizmor Shir Chanukas Habayis LeDavid. David pushed himself. Vayakim Moshe. We have to live the world of Vayechale Moshe as HaMishkan. We have to live the world of Vayas and Vayas Bezalel. The people who push, the people who work, the people who try, the people who are able to go above and beyond and live in the world of the Hoser. The Yotze Mitzrayim who didn't know a thing about building. They didn't understand carpentry and electricity. They didn't understand anything about any form of engineering or what it means to be a contractor builder. They got the job done because if you want to do it, you can do it. Elimelech Biederman says an unbelievable mashal. He explained once, there's a person who was going to a soda machine and he put in a quarter and another quarter. He saw nothing was coming. The Coca-Cola wouldn't come out. So he put in a third quarter. Nachnesh, it still didn't come out. A fourth quarter, nothing's happening. He's frustrated. He's angry. He bangs the soda machine. Nothing's coming out. And a person standing next to him looks and says, what are you doing? What are you so upset about? So the person says, I put in four quarters, four coins. Nothing's coming out. I'm banging the machine. I'm frustrated. He starts walking off in a puff. And the person says to him, fool, my dear friend, don't you know it costs $1.50? You need to put in two more quarters. Put in two more quarters, the soda will come out. And the angry person who started walking off in a huff says, what are you kidding me? I already put in a quarter, nothing happened. Two quarters, three quarters, four quarters, a dollar. You want me to put in two more quarters? Says Rabbi Elimelech Biderman that that individual who wouldn't put in another quarter or two more quarters is really us in our life. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, all I want from you is to try another tefillah, another minute of Talmud Torah, another act of chesed, another smile. Keep on doing more. And we say, no, we've reached the world of Dayam. We can't do anymore. We davened three times and the tefillah wasn't answered. We learned for a year and we still don't understand Rashi and Tosfos. We tried helping somebody and they're still unable to get up on their feet and to make things work the way that we had expected. Says HaKadosh Baruch, you need to try one more time. Put in a little bit more effort. One more tefillah with kavana. Another minute of Talmud Torah. Another act of chesed. Who knows if that's going to be the one that's going to allow the soda machine to overflow with another quarter and another quarter and the soda will come out. And the same way we look at that person and say, don't you see the sign? It's six quarters and not four quarters. It doesn't cost a dollar. It costs $1.50. Put in two more quarters, everything will be okay. We need to understand that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to live the world of Ayas. One more mitzvah. One more avodah. One more bin adam l'makom. One more bin adam l'chaver. That's who we are. That's what we're supposed to do. And we stop just a little bit short. That's what the Nesiim did, unfortunately wrong, and thus they were punished. There's no yud. And their donation is listed last. What we're supposed to do is live the world of Betzalah, Vayas Betzalah, live the world of Moshe, Bahukam, HaMishkan, live the world of the Hoser, not the world of Dayam. And as we approach Purim, Abaleinu Latova, the whole Yesod of the Nes Purim, and the Megillah, and the turnaround, and the turnabout, and the Nafochu comes exactly because of this. Mordechai, and even more so Esther, understood that if we're going to be successful, we need to do something. We need to push ourselves, we need to go above and beyond. We need to proclaim a fast, Sakva, Afer, a Tainis, Tefillah. It's not going to happen automatically. We need to proclaim, we need to make a Gzeru, we need to make a Yom Tefillah, and a Tainis. And it's immediately upon Esther understanding what had to be done. That's when everything turned around. She understood what it meant to take achrayas. She understood what it meant to go and to push and to live the world of a hoser. She understood that I can't just be a person who's dayam. I have to be vayig baliba bedarki Hashem. I have to lift myself above and beyond. And if I do that, then everything will turn around. Nisim will come. We'll be zocha to miracles. But yami mahem bazman hazeh. Miracles don't happen automatically. Miracles come because musar nefesh, misiris nefesh leads to nisim, as Rabbi Yerucham Lavavit says in his mamar, and based upon the Gemara Brachos Daf Chaf, the reason that earlier generations were zocha to nisim was because masrei nafshayu al kiddush Hashem. There's a correlation between mesiras nefesh and nisim. If you try, if you push, if you work, if you're enthusiastic, if you're willing to try, to try, to try, and to try again, then everything comes. And that's the message of Binyan HaMishkan. That's the message of the Parshios HaMishkan, five Parshios, a nation that didn't know what to do, how to do. And nation that was totally unequipped. They were the ones to get the job done because Vayas and Vayasu. Because we were Masur Nefesh, just like Betzalel and Moshe led us. And just like we tried and we put our hands on the crush, and Moshe Rabbeinu teaches us that that's all that has to be done. If we do our best, God will do the rest. Be'ezus Hashem Yisbarach, we should be Zocha. Just like the Dor Yotzei Mitzrayim, just like those who built the Mishkan, just like Mordechai and Esther in the Nes Purim were willing to live the life of a Hoser, willing to live the life of Vayig Balibo B'Darkei Hashem, we too should be Zoche in our own lives and in Klal Yisrael today to be able to push ourselves, to be able to push ourselves a little bit beyond our limitations. Beyond the Dayam is the Hoser. And that's where everything, and that's where all Mimiracha, that's where all Hatzlacha, that's where all Siyata Dishmai can be found. B'Siyata Dishmai, Kodesh Baruch should help us all, individually, nationally, B'Yamim Mahem Azman Azet, B'Zocha Tevenafochu, wishing everybody a wonderful week.